This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, the Dean of all things STEM and STEAM, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. Wow, do we have a different kind of episode for you today? We always say we're excited, but this one is really going to be different. We are not just talking about something cool. We have one of the best challenges that we've ever had on Solve It for Kids.
Yes, this is going to be fantastic. So what problem are we solving today?
Why measure the height of trees?
Why measure tree heights? Ooh, I think there's a challenge with that. And I'm so excited to hear, who is our guest today, Jeff?
Our guest today is the very cool Brian Campbell, who is NASA's Senior Earth Science Outreach Specialist, and he is going to tell us why this problem is so cool to tackle.
Welcome to the show, Brian.
Hey, how are you? Great to be here. Thank you so much.
Oh, we are excited to have you because we get to talk about the height of trees, which I have to say, I've kind of always wondered how trees grow so tall at different heights and why do we care about all of this? But I'm going to start at the beginning because we like to do that. Have you always liked trees? Have you always been interested in being outside and being outdoors?
Definitely interested in being outside, outdoors. I always knew that I would love it so much that I stayed out too long and I'd hear my mom he'd whistle like you'd call a dog. I hear that whistle way up near my house, you know, and I was like, oh, time to come in. I guess it's getting dark. So yeah, always love to be outside, whether it's, you know, just walking around or looking for arrowheads near a creek where I grew up in a little town called Sinking Spring, Pennsylvania, not too far from Philadelphia. But yeah, always like to be outside, whether it's sports as well. But when we talk about trees, you know, when being outside with trees, love trees, kind of grew up with a love-hate relationship with trees.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's kind of strange because we had in our backyard several walnut trees between our yard and our neighbor's yard, black walnuts and English walnuts. So when it was time for them to drop, you really had to scatter because, you know, we'd hear them banging off the woodshed, and the house I grew up in was a historic house. So we actually had two outhouses in the backyard.
Oh, wow.
So when they had metal roofs, so you could hear them banging off the roof. And a couple of times, you know, I was hit by them. And one time, I swear, I was hit by one and I looked up and I saw a squirrel looking down at me. So I'm to this day, I'm sticking to the story that squirrel knew exactly what it was doing. But yeah, I've always loved trees. You know, one of my favorite things still to do is to just lie back in the grass and look up at the trees with the clouds in the distance, the sky in the distance. And it's just very peaceful and relaxing.
Oh my gosh.
But right now I kind of do different things with trees.
Okay. So I have to ask one more real fast one. So we had an apple tree in our backyard. So my question is, were you as a kid, did you have to go pick up all the walnuts before you could mow? Because that's the part that I hated, right? You have to pick up all of these apples before they mow.
Yeah, the house I grew up in, the historic house, was a duplex. So it was basically my family on one side and my stepfather's parents on the other side.
Okay.
And usually my stepfather's father was the one who mowed the grass. So if he felt very energetic, he'd pick up the walnuts. If he didn't, we'd just hear him running over these and these firing against the siding of the house.
Oh my goodness.
So it all depended. You know, I kind of got a kick out of it, and it, you know, it serves as memories for the rest of my life, you know, hearing this mowing and these walnuts. And we had a neighbor who did the same thing, but he'd get angry at it. And then we always used to say, well, you should have probably picked up the walnuts first. Beforehand. So, but yeah.
Sure, much easier to say than to do with picking up the walnuts.
Yes.
And I think all of us can relate to not wanting to do it all the time.
No.
Yeah.
So we are mostly talking about trees today, but I do want to take one little step back that you are NASA's senior earth science outreach specialist. And that isn't just trees.
No.
Earth science, quite literally by definition, covers all the science on the face of the planet. Is that what led you towards this position? Like, you just like science and earth science covers so much of it?
Yeah, I grew up loving science and, you know, really, granted, I love space, you know, like looking at telescopic images of all the planets and the stars and all that. You know, I really didn't do much science clubs really in high school, but I took a lot of science courses, regular to advance to honors one. Got into college, and I actually started in college in the pharmacy program at the University of Pittsburgh. And, you know, but I got into it and I was doing a lot of chemistry, which I like, but I wasn't super excited about.
Yes.
So, you know, I had to do it and I love doing the science, but I want to do something else. So then I went into earth science or at university level, it's called geology and planetary science. So, you know, basically study of our planet and beyond. So, you know, I did that and went into graduate school and the Graduate School of Education to become a teacher. So I got my professional, my advanced degree, my professional you know, certification. And I was a high school earth and space science and physics teacher for 4 years in Maryland.
Fun.
So then, you know, while I was doing that, these positions opened up for teacher interns where we could go as teachers to the Goddard Space Flight Center if selected and work with scientists to help write curriculum using the most cutting edge NASA earth science. And I was working with several people primarily in the cryospheric sciences. So the frozen parts of the earth, Greenland, Antarctica, Arctic areas like that, and learning about climate change that way by developing these lessons. So so then, you know, a position eventually opened up a permanent one back in 2001. And that's when I started at NASA. So I've loved earth science ever since, and I've worked with lots of NASA earth-observing satellites and instrumentation, lots of different programs from working here at my base at the NASA Wallace Flight Facility in phytoplankton research, ocean color research, looking at algae and phytoplankton blooms, all the way through using, you know, Landsat imagery to look at change over time, to looking at soil moisture. You know, I've worked with tons and tons of satellites.
My goodness.
These 2 years. So, but right now I'm kind of in the, you know, really working with trees, and that has a huge thing, which we'll talk about, you know, today, a little bit about why I'm looking at trees and why we're studying trees at NASA and with the GLOBE program.
Right. And I think that's, I mean, first of all, wow, that, you know, I wish those jobs were open now, because those sound so cool. Right, Jeff?
I agree.
Exactly. But so we're talking, you know, the big question is, why are we measuring tree heights? So can you tell us kind of what NASA it does with trees, and why should we care how tall a tree grows? What does it tell us?
Yeah, it's a great question. So there's lots of different variables when we talk about understanding tree height. And the first thing I always say is tree heights are the number one indicator of an ecosystem's ability to grow trees. So basically, where an ecosystem is really healthy, you know, you see lots of, you know, tree growth. I mean, there are areas in the desert that are healthy, but we just don't have the right conditions and soil for growing trees.
Sure.
So if you think about the ecosystems, you can think about two like really cool places on the planet. Think of the Amazon rainforest.
Okay.
That ecosystem is, you know, extremely healthy growing trees because we have lots of trees everywhere. We have the right soil, which is very organic. So it has lots of nutrients in it. We have the right amount of precipitation. We have the right amount of sunlight. But then on the other side of things, you think of like the Sahara Desert. The Sahara Desert is very dry, not a place you see many trees. You might see some desert shrubs here and there, but mostly sand. And the sandy soil just is not really good for growing, you know, lots of trees or even many trees are, you know, definitely not really tall trees.
No. So,
and when we talk about tree height, you know, everybody kind of has maybe from their childhood a favorite tree that they, you know, planted.
Yes.
Or, you know, that they had a tire swing on or something like that. And they may not have thought about it and how it grows, but they know that it has grown, you know, for the most part.
Sure.
So, and then at NASA, you know, in the GLOBE program, we kind of take that to the next step. And with that, when we measure trees, we look at tree height and we look at something called the tree circumference. So there's the two major things we look at.
Okay.
Okay.
And, you know, the reason why we measure those is because they help us understand basically the biomass of an area, you know, the amount of living things in a particular right. region or area.
Okay.
And also trees really help us pull that nasty carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere.
Right.
Sure.
Trees do that through that process called photosynthesis. They pull out that carbon dioxide through photosynthesis and convert that into the oxygen that we breathe every day. So the more trees, the less carbon dioxide, the more oxygen. And by looking
that's all height, positive.
Yeah. And with tree height, you know, basically it's a simple concept where the bigger the tree is, the more carbon dioxide it has put in and is what's called storing, or the fancy, you know, science word is called carbon sequestration. Carbon that's stored inside a tree, and that's stored in the leaves, in the branches, in the trunk, in the roots, all these things. And
okay, so cool. You know,
more carbon that comes in, the more food and nutrients that come in, bigger the tree can get.
Wow.
Okay. Real simple question. How are you measuring the heights of trees?
I like that. It's a simple question, but the technology that we designed at NASA, not that simple. Now, I'll start off with NASA a little bit. There's two main satellites and instruments in space right now. One is the Ice Cloud and Land Elevation Satellite 2, or ICESat 2 satellite.
Ooh,
it's an independent satellite. And it sounds funny that I'm actually mentioning a satellite that starts with the word ice.
I was thinking that.
So what's cool about this is that ICESat 2 fires green lasers at our planet.
What?
And what we do is we fire these lasers towards the Earth from the satellite. And don't worry, they're not dangerous because hundreds of miles above the Earth. So that kind of spreads out. I like to liken it to if someone's standing in front of you with a bright flashlight and shines it in your face, it's going to be bright. You're going to want to cover your eyes.
Right.
Sure.
But if they drive 300 miles away and shine that flashlight in your same direction, you're not even going to notice
it's there.
Yeah. No. Okay.
So what we do with the satellite, with ICESat 2, is we send these laser pulses down 10,000 times per second.
Holy cow.
And what happens is they bounce off an object on the Earth, like a tree, or the ice in Greenland and Antarctica, or buildings, or the oceans. And we calculate the time it takes the laser pulses to leave the satellite, hit an object, and come back to the satellite. And then we can do that repeatedly over time and figure out how the height of objects have changed. Like, did the ice in Antarctica or Greenland in these locations, did it grow or did it shrink? Did the trees get taller? Did a tree fall down? Was there deforestation? You know, did the ocean height get higher? Did it get lower? So we can do that with lasers, okay? And that's one observation that ICESat 2 does, is it measures tree height.
Can I interrupt you for a second? Can you literally see one tree that falls over?
Sometimes. That's a rarity. Now,
okay.
Here's where it gets complicated. That's why when Jeff asked, you know, simple question.
Yeah, simple.
So when the laser leaves the satellite, it's a very small laser. Think of like a laser pen, a laser pointer.
Okay.
A little bigger than that, but it's about that size. And that's called basically a footprint, that the diameter of that laser. When it travels to the Earth, light spreads out.
Right.
So by the time it hits the Earth, that little dot of light that you had leaving the satellite is now 14 meters in diameter.
Wow.
So when it hits the ground and that creates that 14 meter diameter photon footprint, it then bounces back to the satellite. Okay.
Right.
Well, whatever objects are in that, let's say there's, you know, 100 trees in that 14 meter diameter footprint, the average height that's returned is the height of any of the tops of the trees, all the tops of the trees that the photon hit.
Okay.
And back to your question, Jennifer, is that if it happens to land on an area where there's an isolated tree, which it has, but it's rare, the height that's returned to the satellite would be that individual tree.
Huh.
So it can see just individual trees. It can see if an individual tree fell. It can see if a whole grouping of trees felled or, like I said, like deforestation. So, yeah. So with that said, we also have another instrument. Cool. It's on the International Space Station. And you're going to love the name here. It's awesome. It's called JEDI. G-E-D-I.
Yes.
Okay. And this actually fires red laser pulses towards the planet, but it's only measuring tree height in a specific latitude because it's on the International Space Station, which flies at a certain latitude around yes. the equator. Basically, it's technically it's like 51.6 degrees north and 51.6 degrees south. So anything in between that, those latitudes, it can measure the tree height of. Now, the cool thing about JEDI is that, yes, it's on the International Space Station. So astronauts set it up. It got sent out there. Astronauts installed it on the space station. But JEDI stands for Global Ecosystems Dynamic Investigation. Okay. That's not a very, you know.
JEDI is a cooler name.
But its tagline is JEDI, may the forests be with you.
I love it. This is awesome at naming stuff.
Yes.
It's for all those Star Wars fans out there. Yeah.
Excellent. And way to get them interested.
Yes.
So once we have that, I'm sort of taking your last two answers and formulating that next question of why do we measure tree height? You mentioned because the average tree height gives us a general idea of how healthy an area is. And then I asked the quote unquote simple question of how do you measure trees? And you've got this wicked awesome technology. So what does this information help us do? Is NASA sending out like, oh no, trees have felled over here. Send out some tree planters.
Ultimately, what we try to do is one is, you know, we try to figure out where all the trees are on the planet because there's an estimated about 3.03 trillion trees on Earth right now.
Wow.
Trillion.
Yeah. And in that 3.30 trillion, there's about 78,000 tree species out there across the planet.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
So what all this data can tell us is this helps us understand, you know, where are the trees are. So we're trying to create a global tree inventory because if we know where the trees are and we know how tall they are, we can help figure out part of Earth's carbon budget.
Basically
what that, like I said earlier today is, you know, we're really trying to figure out how much carbon dioxide all these trees around the planet are pulling in, you know, from the atmosphere because trees, because of the size of lots of trees and how much carbon they pull in, they are really indicators of climate change.
Right.
Where we see, you know, there's areas like in the Arctic, it's called the Arctic boreal forest, where there's literally millions of pine trees, where in the warmer seasons, they're very active in photosynthesis. But then in the winter, they go, you know, essentially dormant, where photosynthesis slows down dramatically.
Right.
So they're not pulling as much carbon dioxide out. But with that said, if we know where all the trees are, we can develop this database to, you know, let's say we're over an area, let's say, you know, even like, let's say Los Angeles, California, where, sometimes, you know, we have historically we see the skies are a little cloudy, you know, there's some pollution there. That's why a lot of those, you know, locations like in big cities are planting grasses and trees in the urban environments, as well as like on rooftops.
I was going to say on the rooftops, I've seen that. Like when I've been in Chicago or like New York City, you can see gardens, like the whole roof is like a cool garden.
Yep. Yeah. Some of the main reasons for that is one is it literally helps cool the building, you know, the top of the building. So it becomes more energy efficient. It also, you know, planting these trees on this along the streets and the city sidewalks is actually cooling the ground, the asphalt on the ground, you know, creating a little cooler atmosphere there. And then also it's helping to pull in those pollutants because, you know, essentially in cities, we have more people, we have more vehicles, we have more energy usage, we have more buildings. Right. So we're sending a lot more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere in a lot of these cities. That's why a lot of these cities are becoming green because they want to try to offset all that, you know, that carbon that is, you know, kind of, I guess, hovering over those cities for a period of time.
In some places you can see it, like in LA, you can kind of see sometimes the smog.
Yep.
Okay, so now what I want to do is talk to you about this amazing challenge that you have for everybody and that you're trying to get everybody on board. So can you tell us about this challenge that NASA GLOBE has?
Sure. Yeah, it's a challenge through the GLOBE program that's Global Learning and Observations to Benefit the Environment. And it's a NASA-funded program, and we have great support across the United States federal government. We also have support from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the U.S. State Department, and the National Science Foundation.
Cool.
And what's cool about this challenge is we try to hold these challenges several times a year. And if anybody's familiar with the NASA GLOBE Observer, it's basically a, you know, an app, a citizen science app that the GLOBE program has, funded by NASA. And, you know, we have several protocols in there. We have clouds, we have mosquito habitats, we have land cover, and we have trees. And this one, this challenge coming up is called the NASA GLOBE Trees Challenge 2022, Trees in a Changing Climate. And this is kind of brings together what we've already talked about today. But this challenge, basically what we want to do here is we want to try to gather as many tree heights from around the world as possible.
Wow.
In a 1 month time period. And that one month is October 11th, 2022 through November 11th, 2022.
Okay.
You know, the reason why we do this is because we want concentrated data and we want lots of data. The concentrated data is important. It's also called data density.
Right.
And there are areas around the world that some scientists really focus on. And, you know, when the scientists do their research, they take multiple observations in the same location. So with the challenge, one of the things where we really want to happen is that we want people to take multiple observations of the same trees, you know, over this month period. And then we hope after the challenge is over, go back there, you know, weekly, monthly, yearly, and go measure these same trees so we can see these changes happening, which then can, you know, potentially be compared to the satellite and instrument data that I mentioned earlier from NASA.
So
yeah, this challenge is really cool. And you can check it out. We have a URL and it's just observer.globe.gov/trees-2022. And you can just, you know, go in a search engine and just type in GLOBE Trees Challenge 2022 and most likely. The reason why we're calling it trees in a changing climate is because, as I mentioned earlier, trees are a huge indicator of climate change.
Right.
And trees is one of those, if not the greatest variable for looking at that, you know, the climate change indication.
Okay.
But yeah, so, you know, and kind of back to like some other questions, you know, about why we're measuring it, why we're doing this challenge, because as you know, lots of things, you know, trees help us, you know, that moistens the air, it fills it with oxygen, it stores carbon, it creates, you know, habitats for, you know, creatures, you know, large and small, helps us with, provides food and fuel and, you know, building materials. So there's lots of things that, that trees help us with. But with this challenge, we're really focusing on getting those tree height measurements. Now, with that said, with the app, the trees tool on the NASA GLOBE Observer,
right,
we have an optional measurement, which is super important as well, and that's tree circumference.
Oh.
That's where you go and you take a tape measure and you measure from about 4.5 feet above the ground.
Okay.
Up the tree. And then at that spot, you just take the tape measure, and usually takes about two people to do this, two or three people, depending upon the size of the tree.
The size of the tree.
Sure.
Yeah. You could literally be tree huggers, you know,
there as part you of
the Yes.
yeah. You wrap the tape measure around it and, you know, you get that measurement and then you can put that in the app, you know, as a measurement. And that's super important because with that information, along with the tree height, we can figure out that estimated number of how much carbon that tree has brought in. And also potentially estimate the age of the tree, because when you convert the circumference, you can convert that circumference to a diameter. And then you, there's a whole, you know, fancy set of mathematical equations.
That
we scientists use. And it's basically, it's a sequential order of equations where we do everything from all these different, you know, the green weight, the dry weight, and all this crazy stuff.
Right.
To get to these estimated answers. And, you know, I say estimated because with the 78,000 tree species on Earth, every one of these species goes through photosynthesis at a different rate. It grows at a different rate. So that's why it's an estimation. It's not a set number that happens.
Okay. So. I get it. I like that. I like the circumference measurement.
Yeah.
I would like to ask one question on, you guys are measuring trees with these wicked awesome satellites. Could you give our listeners, before we have Timmy and Sally telling mom that they have to climb to the top and jump out with a tape measure, could you give them a quick heads up on how they're going to measure the height of a tree?
Yes.
Yep, sure. So we have something called the NASA Globe Observer, and it's an app that you can measure tree height using a mobile phone or even a tablet.
Oh.
And
like,
what we did was we built into the app, we built the math into it to use your phone's camera and what's the fancy thing in the phone called a magnetometer. It helps you measure like angles and slopes.
Right.
So we turned that magnetometer and your phone into what's called a clinometer. Clinometer is an instrument that you can use to measure the angle to the top of a tree and the bottom of a tree. And then you do some fancy math, some fancy trigonometry to figure out how tall that tree is. But we've done that for you for ease of use. And so you don't have to do trigonometry.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Really appreciate that. Yeah.
My wife's a math teacher, and she said, you should make them do that all the time. Do the trigonometry. And I was like, well, we can do that if we use just the clinometer without the app. So back to the mobile device, the cell phone. So you can use a mobile device and the camera on your phone and the instruments in your phone. You know, you don't have to worry about playing around with the instruments at all because they're already programmed in your phone, whether you have, you know, an iOS device or an Android device. It's going to work basically the same way. So what happens is you download this app. You then, you know, you start doing like the introduction and you do a tutorial, learn how to do it. And once you do that, you can do a tree height observation in about a minute to a minute and a half.
What's cool about this is that
you're only using your cell phone's camera, basically. That's what you're really going to have to worry about, because when you do this, you hold your phone's camera at eye level and you just tilt your phone to the top of the tree so you see the top of the tree. And so there's a little line that's on the app where you align that line to the top. And then you just angle your wrist down. You can't move your arms up and down. You just angle your wrist down, keeping your phone at eye level. You know, you keep that camera at eye level.
Right. Yeah, sure.
And then you look to the bottom of the tree. And then when you do the bottom of the tree and the top of the tree, you take a picture of the tree. And then you have to walk to the tree counting your steps.
Okay.
And you put your steps. Yes, because when you do the
introduction, you're getting the angle.
You're getting that. That cool triangle. You form that cool triangle that helps you get that angle. And then you can figure out the tree height that way. But what's cool about it is, so when you do the introduction, it's the first thing you do when you get into the app.
When you sign up for it,
you go into the trees tool. When you go in, it'll ask you what your height is.
That was very good.
Yep, you put in your height, and then the app will estimate that your eye level will be about 4 inches below the top
your
of your
height.
Head.
Very good.
And then based
yes.
upon your height, it'll estimate your stride. And that's where that walking comes in. Yeah. So when you walk, you count your steps, you plug in a number in the app, and then using that angle that the phone got to the base of the tree, the angle that it got to the top of the tree, and the number of steps you took to the tree, which will be the distance between where you're standing when you're looking at the tree and the base of the tree, that'll calculate the estimated height of that tree.
Cool.
That's cool.
So you want people to do this for more than one tree, I assume.
Yep.
And different heights, because I know I'm thinking I'm only picking the tallest trees, right? Because I want to have like the big data. But you actually want maybe trees that aren't fully grown too, right? Like you want different heights.
Right. Yeah. See, with the GLOW program, we have a consensus, and you know, it's still up for debate in the whole science community, but to make it easier, we have a baseline of what constitutes a tree and what constitutes a shrub. And a tree is about 5 meters tall or close to like 15 feet tall. That's true. Anything below that would be a shrub. But, you know, essentially you can measure these trees, you know, if they're a little smaller, and you can just, you know, if you want to really know the height of them, you can use the app to do that. But all trees is what we're looking for, you know, from small trees to massive trees. I actually, last summer, 2021, My family and I took a trip to Sequoia National Park, and I got to use the app and did a tree height measurement of the General Sherman tree, which the app measured it at 274.9 feet.
Holy cow.
Wow.
And I actually went in afterwards to the National Park Service website for the park, and I looked at it. Actually, they have it listed at 275 feet.
Wow.
So I was like, holy cow, whoa, that app was super accurate. So
super accurate.
Really good job. Yeah. With this. Yeah, it was hard to do because I actually had to get permission from one of the rangers because I had to remove, they let me remove part of the fence so I could walk to the tree because they have it.
Oh, yeah, because you have to get the distance.
Yeah, I had to make sure that they let me do this ahead of time so I could actually get that height. So I had to clear everyone out and then I could do it. Yeah.
That is very cool. Very and cool. I love the fact that you were just able to tell all the listeners that you were already out there using this app and you did it for something fun.
Yeah.
This is going to be a lot of fun for kids out there.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, you know, my son, when he first learned how to do it, my son's 15 now. And when he first learned to do it, he was about 12 and he was super excited about it. He's like, this is super easy and super cool. You know, and I thought, wow, that's pretty awesome coming out of a, you know, a preteen's mouth, you know, when they have, when they're especially into like anime and Rubik's Cubes and, you know, watching music videos and things like that and playing on their Xbox and stuff.
To get them interested in a tree, you're doing something really good.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
He also thought it was cooler because, you know, because his dad helped design it. So,
well, nice. Of course. That, I mean, now he gets to tell people that. Yeah. So, okay. This data that you're going to gather from the ground, are you then going to compare it with what you're getting from the satellites? Can you?
Yes.
Like you, it has GPS data, I assume, where the tree is and everything, so you can compare?
Yeah, so awesome. That's awesome. I'm glad you brought that up because when you take every tree measurement with the NASA Global Observer Trees tool, every tree is what's called geolocated. It has a latitude and a longitude that's in the app. So when you submit that data to the GLOBE program and to NASA, every one of those trees have the latitude and longitude. So then what you can do is anybody can do it. You can go into, there's a cool site called openaltimetry.org and anybody can go into it. It's actually by a group called the National Snow and Ice Data Center out in Colorado, but they house our ICESat-2 data because we get about a terabyte of data a day from ICESat-2.
Whoa, that's a lot.
So, yeah, it's a lot of data. So what you can do is you can go just onto that site where it says where they have ICESat-2 data and you can plug in the latitude and the longitude of your tree and then see if ICESat-2 was able to measure it yet.
Oh, that's neat.
That's cool. So cool.
It may not be. I mean, there's some trees that I've measured and I looked and, you know, ICESat-2 didn't hit that exact location yet or there were too many clouds in the sky above. Oh. So the laser pulses couldn't penetrate through those thick clouds to get that, you know, the height of the tree underneath. But fingers are always crossed that it happens. You know, there are a couple in our neighborhood that ICESat-2 has gotten, and I've done comparisons between the two. So it's really cool. So yeah, anybody can go and do that. You know, Open Altimetry website was created for researchers, but I always say a researcher doesn't have to be an adult. All over the planet. There's students who are doing research projects in elementary school to middle school to high school to college, you know, and they can use this information. And kids nowadays are so computer and technologically savvy that, you know, this website
absolutely
nothing for them to do, you know. But yeah, so back to that question is, yeah, we can do comparisons to the satellite data if, you know, if the data is available from the satellite. And, you know, with the literal trillions and trillions of observations of Earth from ICESat-2, you know, there's a good chance that the trees you've measured have been measured by ICESat-2.
Right.
That's awesome.
That's so neat.
Yeah.
So what is, I know we've been talking a while and I'm sure Jen's going to finish us up here sometime soon. What is, you said this is going for a month from October 11th through November 11th. So you want to get as much data as possible. And then you were just describing how that data from the ground and from all of us will be combined and compared with satellite data. What is the goal? I know you mentioned a sort of global database of trees.
Yep.
I don't imagine this 1 month program is going to get us to the end of that. What's the goal of this program?
I should also mention that the GLOBE program is active in 127 countries.
Oh, wow.
Across the world. And, you know, if we can get lots of tree height observations from the ground in that short amount of time, we'll also be able to fill in those potential gaps that the satellite and instruments may not have gotten to yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, what scientists use with their research, they really like using data sets. And that's just you know, a big collection of data, you know, from all over. And there's specific regions that scientists focus on. And, you know, if we have, you know, we have six GLOBE regions all over the world. You know, one, for instance, is the North Africa region. If we get a bunch of trees, you know, in the North Africa region, there's scientists that are looking at the satellite data and they may say, oh, I don't see tree height observations in these locations where I know there are trees. Well, maybe some of the citizen scientists, the students, maybe the kids, maybe the adults, maybe the teachers have taken tree height measurements in those locations. So, you know, it's a combination of we want to get as many tree height observations as possible from the ground through this challenge and from space through the NASA satellites and instruments. But we also want to be able to fill in, you know, this tree inventory across the planet for research purposes. Cool. The satellite, even though it sees a lot, it doesn't see everything.
Right.
Because there are variables. Like I mentioned earlier, there's clouds that can cause some problems, you know, with the lasers. You know, there's parts on the earth that are persistently cloudy, but also have lots of trees.
Yes.
You know, we have areas where even in like Seattle, Washington, you know, we have a super rainy place, you know, throughout the year.
Sure.
And, you know, we don't have as many tree height observations as we want from there. So that's a great place for kids and adults and everyone to get out and take tree height observations as part of this challenge. And I'll also stress and beyond, because this tool has been around since March 26th of 2019. And, you know, we have probably just under 100,000 tree height measurements from citizen scientists, students, and teachers, and, you know, volunteer scientists from around the world. These challenges are great because we really like to boost this with this densely packed data in a short amount of time.
Right.
So then scientists can then use satellite data and look what the satellites and instruments have seen during this month-long period and do comparisons that way as well.
Yeah, this is so cool. So yes, we've kind of reached that time in the show, but the challenge is to do this GLOBE challenge, NASA. I'm just going to call it the NASA GLOBE Trees Challenge 2022. We'll have all of this information on our website, Solve It for Kids, and we'll be promoting it on our social media. But it's been so great talking with you today, Brian, especially about all of this. We hope everyone can get as excited about trees as you are. So thank you for being on Solve It for Kids.
Thank you so much. And everyone, watch out for those falling walnuts from the walnut trees.
Absolutely.
Look up in those trees first.
Yep. Absolutely.
From a simple question like why measuring tree height, talk about going into a totally exciting realm about counting all of the trees on planet Earth and how much carbon dioxide they can take in and calculating a number. Wow, this ramped up the coolness exponentially, Jen.
I know, right? I mean, I think this is going to be so cool. I hope a lot of our listeners do this challenge.
Yes.
Because I want to see, hopefully they will let us know what they find, but I want to see how many of them can actually figure out how high the trees are around their neighborhood. I am going to totally do this. What do you think, Jeff?
Totally. Brian had it 100% correct. Everybody has a favorite tree, and we may not still live near it. It may be one where we grew up. But everybody's got a favorite tree around them, and we can kind of guesstimate a height, but now we can see how close our guesstimate always was and take that data and give it to NASA so they can help the planet.
That sounds awesome. So everybody go do the NASA GLOBE Tree Challenge 2022. If you don't know what it is, you can check it out online and also at our website. We are solveitforkids.com. And then maybe even share some pictures with us or tell us how it went. You can tag us on our social media. We are at Kids Solve at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And we can't wait to see what kind of trees you measure.
Absolutely right. Whether you send us pictures of you measuring it, videos, I would love to see a picture or a video of a few of you doing a real tree hugger and getting that circumference of your favorite tree as well. But I know for sure, until next time, Jeff and his daughter Zoe will be out measuring all the trees my daughter and her friends have given names to. When we are done with that, you will hear us next time on
Solve It for Kids.